Reading from the Jivadharma, Chapter 3. Om Vijayati Marandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Taksuram Bhutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurude Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Napti Tam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindo Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Pisan Falls, unexpectedly returned here. Actually, I gave a class, I think that was last night, at the Bhakti Center, called The Skill of Happiness. And I was meditating, it's a seminar to prepare, and I was meditating on the class. And then when I woke up that morning, that was yesterday's morning, it was one of those days where the stars were aligned. You know, I had this next class, the evening, no meetings, you know, it's not easy in New York for that day. I had a really peaceful place to stay and just feeling spiritually alive and healthy. And I was just meditating. Wow, this is great. You know, it's not often even anybody in a day where like, hey, everything's going my way. And then I got a call, you know, that Ram Roy was walking the street where I parked my car. Was vandalized. And he said, you know, the car's been smashed. Now they broke the front, the side window. And they broke the window by the driver's side and they stole something in the car. Now, I think a GPS or something. But it was interesting. I was able to use that story for my class because the point I made to the people is, should that have made me unhappy? Because my class was about the skill of happiness, or should it have reduced my happiness? And, you know, the class was about real happiness is the flourishing of the soul, not your external circumstances. Although your external circumstances can affect the flourishing of the soul, but they're not happiness in itself. So it was kind of interesting that I got to use that. It was so nice. There's so many nice people there. It's such a joy when you have people who really listen and are open to being transformed, which means to change, which means to sometimes give up some of our attachments. You know, and seek things which are good for us rather than just give us some temporary pleasure. Although pleasure itself is not an obstacle to happiness if it doesn't affect one's conduct. You know, there's certain pleasures we get that are okay according to who we are, if they're not inherently an obstacle to the flourishing of consciousness. Anyway. I want to get into that class. We're in another class now. So we're reading Jivadharma, and we are following the lives of people coming to Krishna consciousness after Lord Chaitanya. Right now we're following the life of Sannyasa Thakur, a impersonalist, Mayavad sannyasi, personalist sannyasi, who somehow at the mercy of a Vaishnava and gradually came to Krishna consciousness and had his doubts cleared. and advance sufficiently to for initiation. And when the Gyani comes to Krishna, one who's already not on the bodily platform, he comes basically on the platform of pure love, because he's already not asking something for the body. So he advanced very quickly, and then his guru spontaneously initiated him when his consciousness had changed. Your consciousness can change and you can get initiated, or you can get initiated and your consciousness will change, or you commit yourself. Bhakti really deals with the ego. We go up the conception that I am the center, and we try to serve the center. And the will of the center, the voice of the center, the words of the center are expressed through the spiritual master. And we see the depth of that relationship when one understands it. So the Vaishnavas are very pleased to see his transformation. And he's exchanging in a very beautiful way with the wonderful Vaishnavas. We can even imagine what it's like to be in the association of such exalted souls, who have such depth of understanding. Bhakti is not just a mental change, it's a change in consciousness. It's a bhava. It's a well of wisdom and devotion, which you are living in. It's not almost something you're creating, it's something that's engulfing you. And therefore, with that consciousness, this is not move around just because the externals change so quickly. Anyway, to be with people who have that consciousness, to exchange with people who have that consciousness, that's what we seek. And that's the kind of sangha and communities that we try to create. So those kind of communities are very much based on kirtan, which is the expression of that consciousness. That's what kirtan is, the expression of bhakti or spiritual love. And when one does kirtan, especially sankirtan with others, it creates, you know, sound is so powerful, it becomes the predominating object in the environment. I saw that. One of the reasons I was so happy on Thursday is, on Tuesday is, Monday evening from 4 to 6, I went with Jai Giridhari to the kirtan. I went with Jai Giridhari to the kirtan, and you know, it's just beautiful. When I came, you know, something that was no crazy people that would somehow people, I get disturbed when I feel people are not representing Krishna consciousness properly. It's just, anyway, it's my own weakness, but that's the way I am. But there's such a nice group of people there and so presentable in terms of, and the kirtan was so beautiful. And I saw her. The kirtan takes over that space. it's almost like God expands in sound in a way that even people who are not inclined or even can live within that space. They live within that space. They live within that space. It's so beautiful. So the people having kirtan, and one person came there, and he was a Brahmin from an aristocratic family. He was learned. He knew culture, music. And he had studied even. This gentleman was trained in Indian classical music. And he sometimes put himself forward in the performance of kirtan. But Vaishnavas did not like that. And the reason why the Vaishnavas didn't like that is because kirtan is an expression of spiritual love. And even if you have that, you try to express it through the discipline of music, it can the spiritual love can be co-opted by the ego into being used for entertainment and the bolstering of one's ego. And the real Vaishnavas will see that because it won't have the same potency or effect. Anyway, he came to that assembly, and then somehow or other, he somehow raised some inquiry in the assembly of Vaishnavas that was disturbing. And he was questioning why the Vaishnavas are opposed to the rules of the Brahmin. It's not that they're opposed to them, but why they're not adherent to all the rituals of the Brahmin, which is the highest caste. And according to the different Dharma Shastras, these are things we people do. Now, Vaishnavas have no taste for argument because a lot of the taste for argument is the defense of one's ego. It's a defense of one's power, which one wants to control the world with. So people wanted Paramahamsa Babaji Mahasai, the guru of this Sannyas Thakur, who's now Vaishnav Das, he got initiated, to answer. But he asked his disciple to answer, who is Vaishnav Das. And Vaishnav Das, although he doesn't feel himself fortunate, it's such the humility is such the nature of love. Because love means desire to serve. And it's accepting, therefore, something worthy of one's service. It's a very humble position. And one who has that love feels very insignificant, happily. But because his guru has asked him, he takes the dust of his feet and he begins to speak. And, you know, he's a real scholar, and now he's going to use that in devotional service. So first he explains the position of Sri Chaitanya as the source of all avatars and how he's also expanded into Brahman and the Paramatma, God in the heart, and therefore he's asking for God in the heart to peer, God to peer within his mind and enable him to answer this question. It's very interesting. The ability is there, but the potency to access that ability to its fullest extent, and more than just one's ability, it comes through the platform of mercy. It comes through mercy. And mercy is something that is felt when one doesn't have the sense of pride and entitlement. To experience mercy, by definition, mercy requires an object of mercy. To experience mercy and to embrace the concept and idea and feeling that I am an object of mercy, that indeed, it's a very humble position. And it's that position that's required to both invoke mercy and to experience it to the fullest extent. Especially in the understanding of spiritual problems. So Vaishnav Thakur is going to answer this in a very systematic and scholarly way, and we'll follow. And he explains that regards to religious pursuits, there's two tendencies. To do things because they are correct. To serve God because it is the right thing to do, and to serve God because you are attached to God. The first tendency is Vaidhi. You have faith in a rule that's coming from the sacred text, the Shastra, that represents God. You have faith in the rule. And you follow the rule to get the benefit of that rule. There's Mangal Arti, there's Arti in the morning, and your faith is if you go to it, you get some spiritual benefit. So you're focused on the completion of the activity, and your sadha, is the rule. And then there's Raganuga, spontaneous devotion. And that, rather than following the rule to serve Krishna, you're following your spontaneous attraction to serve Krishna. And that spontaneous attraction is the state of the soul. Now, that's called Raganuga. It's the nature of the soul. It's the perfected state of the self. So when you have that attraction, you no longer need to be governed by rules and prohibitions to serve Krishna, because you're prompted to do it by your spontaneous love. And therefore, one may is not obligated to be guided by the rules and prohibitions, although one will naturally do the things that please Krishna and give up the things that displease Krishna. But if that is not your standard and your faith, the rules, then some of them you may not follow when they're not conducive to the service of Krishna. So you can see what's Vaishnav Das, formerly Sannyas Thakur, is saying. He's building a case why a Vaishnava may not always follow certain rules and prohibitions. Because the goal is of both is the attachment, the pleasure of Krishna. And one is naturally doing that. And therefore, one may not follow a rule. If it doesn't serve that purpose, doesn't mean that necessarily they'll break a rule. I don't know if a good example, there may be certain sadhana or program that one follows. But if one has spontaneous love, you may not follow that program. Because the program you're following, it's to serve Krishna. And because you don't have attraction, you're obligated. But someone may be serving Krishna in another way, spontaneously. It may not fit into that structure. And so he goes on to explain that this perfected state or the liberation from the soul's attachment to the world, not just his utilization of the world, but his attachment to the world, the soul's jiva's relationship with the material world, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, that consciousness, which if that is your desires, if you don't regulate yourself by certain obligations and duty, you'll fall prey to that. So that relationship with the material, it's culminated only at the time where Krishna wills. Only when the time you fully attract Krishna's mercy, because the energy of the world that keeps us bound in the world is Krishna's energy. He sent us the illusory potency to fulfill our desires not to be what we are, which is a servant of Krishna. And until this time, that we get this kind of mercy, the spiritual practitioner's relationship with the world will not fully be terminated. And during that time, the soul will be, can attain, until one gets Krishna's full mercy. This is such a deep and esoteric point, but I hope you can follow. It's not everybody in this listening to this may the mature devotional servant. But look at what he's saying here, and we're going to see where it goes, but first understand what he's saying here. That until Krishna wills, until you can attract Krishna's mercy, your freedom from matter will be limited to the extent of your mind and not to the extent of your body. In other words, your spiritual situation, even your spiritual form, will be a mental conception, but you won't be situated in your spiritual body. That comes by the will and mercy of Krishna. And when that happens, it's called Swarup City and Vastu City. This is very esoteric stuff coming at the beginning. It's only the third chapter, but we still have a lot more chapters before we really get into it. But he's touching it here, this Vaishnav Das. He's explaining. The question is why the Vaishnavas don't follow all those rules and regulations that the Brahmin does? And he's making the point, really. Not just the Vaishnavas, it's which Vaishnavas? It's ones who have attracted Krishna's mercy. And they become liberated from their attachment to matter, and they're actually situated in a real deep spiritual conception. And at that time, the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, Ragatmaka Vritti, the mood of the residents of Vrindavan at this stage of liberation is awakened. In both his conception and actually his form. And that you attain this, by following the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. And when you do that, you receive many different spiritual graces, and you attain this Raga Nuga state. And this condition is what the jivas should be aspiring for. So Vaishnav Das, he wants to explain why they don't follow all the rules and regulations, the Vaishnavas. He said, because they've come to this point of complete liberation of the nature of the soul, which is to serve Krishna in a particular way. As do the residents of Vrindavan. And until one comes to this point, he explains, until this, one still has some identification with matter. And what he's going to say, and because he has that identification with matter, to the extent that he does, his engagement in devotional service will be based on his faith in the scriptures which direct one in a certain way. Because because your natural attachment will be for the body. And if you act spontaneously, you'll act to serve the body. So unless you are guided and have faith in the direction of Shastra, you'll just follow your material attachments. So now he describes what is that material conception that needs to be guided and regulated. Well, he says the conceptions of I and mine are two egoisms whose influence is very prominent and leads one to think I am the body and things in relationship to the body are mine. And that's material consciousness. That's your objective. Your objective is to use the world to endorse your superiority. And when you have that conception, you become attracted to people and to things that endorse your ego and endorse your material conception. And you become averse to people that don't. And that's why often it's natural, in one sense, to hate Guru also. Because that type of surrender can impede one's material pursuit. So when you're in this conception, material conception, where you're seeing the world as objects for your own pleasure, because you are the enjoyer, and therefore you want possession of things that can satisfy and endorse your desires and ego, then you consider people to be friends, enemies, and you develop all this, what we see. It says love or hatred in three ways. In relation to the material body and acquisitions, we love those things that give us. We hate things that don't. In relation to society and social ideas, we like those. We like that society and social ideas that endorse our material desires, and we hate those that don't. In relation to moral and ethics. And you can, and therefore you're in material existence, and you can see it so carefully. You can see it so clearly that we're attracted to things and objects and societies and ideas and morality and ethics according to our consciousness. And when you have material consciousness, you can see people hate with material consciousness. They feel threatened by a morality and ethics of regulation and rules. A morality and ethics of surrender and service. A society and social ideas of surrender and service and cooperation. So he's describing the material condition. So when it's a very beautiful way of answering the question. He's going to show the consciousness that necessitates this type of regulation and rules, and therefore explain why, indirectly, why someone who is not in this consciousness does not require this type of program. And then what happens? He goes on further. You become under the sway of happiness and distress. That which gives you enjoyment and pleasure, gives you happiness. That which doesn't give you distress And therefore, you become very, very attached to wealth and the opposite sex. And that becomes one's consciousness, how to accrue these things, how to position oneself to get these things, how to act to get these things, and how much we ourselves are affected by this consciousness. If we're honest and we introspect and see how much of our waking consciousness is concerned with getting profit, adoration, and distinction in the world. And when you're in this consciousness, it's called samsara. You just take birth again and again to try to experience this, or really the purpose is to become frustrated with this. Because external things don't change the consciousness. When I was out on the street there in New York, on East 2nd Street, you know, the real New Yorkers are not the people who are studying in the yoga studios. They're the people that hang out on the streets, that come from the place. And East 2nd Street, it's very interesting. It's got that big park cemetery and this big church. There's a lot of people there. And boy, when they saw me with the smashed car, they all came up trying to help. I felt really a kid. My fellow New Yorkers. You know, I know their language. I know their mood. Very nice. One guy came up to me. I was calling 911. And I kept on, yes, they answered and they put it in. And it's like a lineup. And I was waiting an hour and a half. And still no police car was there. And then one of the guys in the neighborhood came up and he looked at me. He said, look, were you waiting for the police? I said, yeah. He said, what do you do? He said, I dialed 911. He looked at me and he shook his head. He said, no, dial 218-742-2811. And then dial zero. So I dialed the number and it's gone. He said, no, don't listen to the numbers. Dial zero. 9th precinct, front desk. Yes, I'd be waiting for the police car to come. But while I was waiting out there, it's alternate street of the parking. So this lady had parked the car right in front of me the same time I had parked. And then she had come back. And when I had come there, you know, because it's alternate side of the street parking, you have to wait in your car because it's not legal to park there from certain hours. So after they clean the street, there's still a half hour left. You have to sit in the car, otherwise you get a ticket. So you have to stay by your car. So she was brushing glass away. I guess it's a common occurrence there. So she was talking to me. Yeah, you know, I got a flat. So she came back, and then she started talking to me while the police finally had come. And she was from Sweden, and she was an artist. She must have been in her 40s or 50s. Obviously very attractive, dynamic type person. And, you know, she just started talking to me as I was waiting for the police and, you know, explaining about New York and how she's been here for 25 years from Sweden, but ideally it's good to come just for a couple of months and have someplace else. And I thought, yeah, if your conception of happiness is New York, in 25 years, it won't be your conception of happiness because it's not the cause of your transformation, your flourishing of your soul. That's the nature of the material world. It will frustrate you if that's your faith, that sublimity is the world conforming to my desires, because no matter what it is, no matter what pleasure you get, it's not going to make you happy unless the consciousness is transformed. So that's what he's saying. And so this is the material condition. And it's based on so much attachment. And then he concludes, the jiva who is bound in this way cannot easily comprehend spiritual attachment, nor can he realize or experience such a thing. Fully. So, this is the true function of the jiva, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. But the person is materially attached if he gets this. He's engrossed in matter, and he suffers in this condition. Although, when you're conditioned to something, some pleasure, you don't realize it's suffering. It's like someone, I give an example, a heroin addict. You know, it's a pleasure they like, but it's degrading the consciousness and causing depression. So when you're in this condition, you're not acquainted with the raganuga nature, what to speak of, that spontaneous love for God, what to speak of the full maturation of it in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Unless it's awakened by the mercy of sadhus. And therefore, it's not an ordinary thing, because it's dependent on mercy. So now, this Vaishnav Thakur, all the people are just listening to him. He's answering this question about why the Vaishnavas are not. See, he's putting it, he's such a scholar. So first he's explaining. What the spiritual nature is, and to be guided by that, is, and what the material nature is. So therefore, he concludes that God, wanting fortune for people, wanting auspiciousness for people, gives them a path of rules and regulations, because it's not their tendency to do what's best for them. Even though it's best, it's just to serve God fully with your heart. Being in the center is not to our interest, because we're not in the center, and therefore it's a superficial and artificial position, which to experience, one has to be put into illusion. So therefore, there's rules. The shastras are manifest. In the hearts of ancient rishis, and they give all the rules and regulations for the populace to follow who have no natural attraction to God. And they give faith in that. So, there's people that have no attraction for religious codes, and then there are people who are fortunate to get faith in religious codes, and then there are people who are fortunate to get faith and love and devotion for God, who want to serve Him naturally. And therefore, there's so many rules and regulations that one must follow. Okay, I'm going to end here. Any other questions? Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Nanda Dula, yes, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, thank you. Who else wants to say hello there?
This is Gail Maharaj. I did have a question.
Okay.
you had said that if a person has not gotten that mercy from Krishna for, I think, a spontaneous attraction for his service, he can only be he will only be liberated to the extent of his mind, not to the extent of his body.
Yeah, well, there's it's hard to translate this in a class like this, but there's Sarup City and Vastu City. And Sarup City is that one understands his spiritual position and thinks of it and has that identity in his mind.
Okay.
And the other, and that's called Sarup City, and the other is Vastu City, that one actually, you know, is situated, actually becomes situated in the spiritual body. And that's Vastu City.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and can I ask one other thing?
Go ahead. Yeah.
So a person who has spontaneous attraction, for Krishna. If following the rules interferes with his being able to follow his heart, in his particular desired way of serving Krishna, then that person doesn't have to follow the rules.
That's true. It's like, but what it says in the Bhakti Sandarbha, it says to the extent. So it's kind of not black and white. It's to the extent. Because if one doesn't have natural love and loosens up his,
following.
Mm-hmm. Then they'll fall prey, as it's described here, to one's natural desires. You know, like they'll say, oh, I don't have to go to this program because I'm spontaneous. And then they'll feel like sleeping. They'll go to sleep. You know, or they'll get distracted in a certain way. But one who is spontaneously attracted, they'll be absorbed on their own. They don't have to. Then absorb because they have a regulation that I should be going to this program. But they're absorbed because they're attracted to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So the extent that that's there, and it doesn't mean that one won't follow the rules, but they'll follow them for a different reason. Not that one won't go to Mangalartik, but he won't go to Mangalartik because it's a rule. And therefore has faith when the conch shell blows, he's done his duty and he'll get a benefit spiritually. He'll go because he's attracted to Krishna. And his meditation there won't be on completing the activity, but being absorbed in the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes, thank you, Mother.
Anybody else like to say hello? Yeah, sometimes people can't mute, unmute. Okay, well, we can end now. Thank you all. Once you call for through this, Dr. Kristen.